4 days later, the nation and the world were jolted again by what can only be described as a man-made disaster. Martin Luther King Jr., Nobel Peace Laureate and symbol of nonviolence, had interrupted preparations for his Poor People's March to take part in the garbage men's strike in Memphis. At 6:30 on April 4th, Dr. King was on the balcony outside his room at the Lorraine Motel. A convicted bank robber, James Earl Ray, who had escaped from a Missouri state prison 12 months earlier, looked across through the telescopic sight of a high-powered rifle. In another room off the balcony was a young black reporter cameraman, Joe Lowe, who had been covering the Poor People's March and was one of the last persons to see the civil rights leader alive.
At 6 o'clock, I went back to my room to watch the Huntley-Brinkley show. I was in room 309. Dr. King was in room 306, less than 60 feet away. As soon as I turned on the television set, he came on the screen, speaking to the audience he had addressed the night before. He was saying very powerfully that he was ready to die.
Difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. And I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live.
When the program ended, I reached over to turn the set down. That was when I heard the shot ring out, and I rushed out on the balcony. I saw Dr. King lying about 40 feet away. Ralph Abernathy was there, and so was Andy Young. Police poured down the street, running with rifles. The scene was confused and frantic. An ambulance arrived. But there wasn't much anyone could do. I knew they had killed him. It was hard to believe, after all the threats and close calls, that it had finally happened here, at a motel in Memphis, Tennessee.
The night King died, there were fires in 29 different states and 125 cities. Baltimore, Chicago, Kansas City, and most searing of all, Washington, less than 10 blocks from the White House. When they buried Dr. King, two Georgia mules pulled the dirt farmer's wagon which carried the plain pine coffin from Ebenezer Baptist Church through Atlanta to Morehouse College and then to Southview Cemetery. Among more than 50,000 who marched through Atlanta that day were all the presidential hopefuls: Nixon, Rockefeller, McCarthy, Humphrey, Lindsay, and one who would not be a candidate 60 days later.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen,
Robert Kennedy, whose eloquent tribute to King had its own irony.
This is a time of shame and a time of sorrow. It is not a day for politics. I have saved this one opportunity, my only event of today, to speak briefly to you about the mindless menace of violence in America, which again stains our land and every one of our lives. It is not the concern of any one race. The victims are most important of all, human beings whom other human beings loved and needed. No one, no matter where he lives or what he does, can be certain who next will suffer from some senseless act of bloodshed. And yet it goes on and on and on in this country of ours. Why?